"It is hard," said the commentator on the radio yesterday morning, "to imagine the horror of Friday night in Paris." He said, "Maybe these eyewitness accounts will help." He said, "A young student came out onto the street because," she said, "it's my neighborhood." A man with a bunch of flowers, wondering where to lay them. The undertaker's van. The dried blood on the pavement. And then he went on to say, "We don't need to imagine, because the terror of the inferno overwhelmed the power of imagination." While selfishly we can say it's not our country, it couldn't be much nearer. For so many years, all such atrocities have been far away from us in countries we have probably never visited, pictures on our television screens that we can turn off by tapping a button. But these too are real situations with real people, men and women, boys and girls, young and old. It is quite easy to become dulled by the same type of pictures, day after day, news program after news program. So rightly, we are distressed and horrified at this atrocity on our geographical doorstep. But let us realize that sadly and horrifyingly, this is what is going on day and daily in so many parts of the world. So what to think this morning? As I said, these perhaps are more random thoughts than I would normally like to produce, but they were just written yesterday. First, please don't blame God. So many people have said to me, and I've heard it before, "Where is God on such occasions and in such places?" I can say, and others do, especially those who've been in extreme situations, have proved God is right beside those who are suffering. Then they say, "Well, why can't God stop this evil?" And you can answer, because God, in his love for us, has given us free choice. And then they say, "But God surely could have made us different so that we didn't do these things." Yes, God could have made us robots. And then what joy and delight would we have missed? What love we would never have known? What a dull world it would be if all we were robots. A non-world and non-people. God hates evil. And God does not cause evil. God is a God of love, and his will for us is to live and love in peace with all people. You can also say on a different level, "Well, why are there road accidents and train crashes? Why does God not intervene?" When God created the world, he created it good, and his plan was the people working together for good. And God doesn't alter the rules and regulations of order to suit the situations that mankind causes to happen. God has given us free choice. And sadly, as we saw in the cruel death of his own son, Jesus Christ, by human beings, and God did not intervene. So let me say again, God is a God of love. And it's humanity that causes inhumanity to one another. Differences in race and color and creed. We see them. And there's the problem. What do you believe about your religion? How far will you go for your beliefs? What will you do because of your belief? What are you willing to sacrifice because of your beliefs? People often say war is always caused by religion. It does seem like that sometimes, but dig a little deeper. And it's not religion, but mistaken ideologies, mistaken interpretations and understanding of religion. I have a book on my desk at the moment, and it's called The Killing Times. And it's about Scotland. And it's about Christianity. And it's about Presbyterianism. The Killing Times. Times some 400 years ago, when Church of Scotland people were killing each other in the name of religion, or in the name of their understanding of religion. And I can tell you that book is no less shocking and no less bloody and no less atrocious than what we see and hear happening today. It's not religion, it's ignorance and stupidity and misunderstanding and self-aggrandizement that all have a part to play. What does the Holy Book, whichever you read, actually say? We must be honest, in our Bible, there's a load of violence, especially in the Old Testament, shocking, bloodthirsty stuff. But we have the New Testament, and in the name of God and following the example of Jesus, we do know what is expected of us and how we should behave. And perhaps even at this time, instead of criticizing others, we should look to ourselves, our own thoughts, our own attitudes, whether we are showing ignorance, stupidity, misunderstanding towards others of another faith. I've not read the Quran. I haven't studied any other religious scriptures. But we've heard today from true Muslims who stress the fact that killing is wrong in their religion. The ideal of the Quran is love for all people. But then, of course, we hear this word radicalization, people being radicalized. A preacher taking one feature of belief and adapting it to his belief or her belief. And with such a fervor that attracts those who are searching for belief. And they're searching for belief because no one has told them of any other belief. And so we have to ask today, are we teaching our children? And are we teaching our young people the truth? What are they seeing on television, video, YouTube, and the like? Is it a good example of life and living? And I have to say, do you even know what the youngsters are watching and sharing and seeing? Sadly, it seems to me there's a lot of blood and violence around. And then, as I was saying about a fortnight ago, oh, it's only pretend, it's only fun, it's only entertainment. But is it? To those who are not sure what to think, they can easily mix up fiction and reality. And then they find their lives slipping down in the wrong direction, and it's easier to keep on slipping down than to climb up and out. We must ask ourselves as Christians, what are we doing in our belief system? And are we hiding behind our thoughts and our feelings? Are we acting on what we believe? And while we don't want to be accused of radicalizing anybody, are we making sure that even those nearest and dearest to us know what is right and good and proper and peace and love? So what's going wrong in the world today? Well, I say education. And education perhaps is a lot of the problems. But I also think it's family life, attitudes and priorities in the home, the time people share with their children and the principles they set for their children. Examples shown and copied, and most of all, love given and received. Family life, let me explain. Those terrorists that we heard about, whose dastardly actions we saw all too clearly on Friday night, they started life as a product, hopefully, of love and commitment between two people. Each one of them was a little baby, lying in his mother's arms, as far from the gun-wielding, murder-threatening maniac he or she has become. When you see and hear youngsters for whom no one cares, or whose home is so disorganized that they don't have a place, where no one cares or even knows where they are, where there is no order or system, is it surprising that some of them at least, will find a place or a person where they are wanted and needed? And then, sadly, too late, they find the reason for being wanted and needed is, to put it bluntly, illegal. Yes, that teenager, that 20-year-old, was once loved and cradled in his mother's arms, and hopefully in his father's arms too. Family life is so important. The way a child is treated is the way the child will become. More about family life, but thinking of our wider family, I turn to a sermon written by the Reverend Dr. Andrew McClellan after the shocking events at Dunblane. You remember those many years back. And he writes in the sermon on seeing how the community in Dunblane rallied round. The whole of Scotland responded, in the UK and even the world. I remember I was abroad at the time, and I received a letter from somebody I hardly knew, sympathizing with me because how my country had been sullied by the actions of one man. But Andrew McClellan says, we have glimpsed this week our common humanity, that we are united by being a member of the human race, and that matters more than the differences of temperament, politics, religion, and history, which always divides us. He says, live the conviction that those who suffer, and he cites London, New York, Jerusalem, Cambodia, are our brothers and sisters. Sadly, as one commentator said on Saturday, and even this morning on the radio, we are living in a polarized society. Andrew McClellan says, live the conviction that those who disagree with us are not our enemies, but are our fellow human beings. That those people we don't like are not to be hated or feared or demonized, for they are our fellow human beings. And we are part, indissolubly, part of common human life together. They are very anxious of the reaction there will be throughout the world to all of the Muslim faith. Perhaps this is the message of this part of my thoughts, that we should live the conviction that we are all part of the human race. We are all human beings together, and we must live in peace one with another. So what of today? Should we not be fighting in Syria or Afghanistan or Nigeria? Let me immediately rephrase that. While we shouldn't be at war in Syria, Afghanistan, Nigeria, and these other places, we should be taking action on behalf of our fellow human beings, the people who are suffering hurt, destruction, cruelty, murder, whatever else. Should we just turn a blind eye and deaf ears not only to their inhumanity and their suffering, and to the people causing such hurt? Surely something must be done. Is all war wrong? There are two passages in the Old Testament that seem very similar about pruning hooks and spears. If you read the prophet Joel, he says to the farmers that he's speaking to in his prophecy, he says, turn your pruning hooks into spears. And then another prophet, some books later on, Micah, he says, the reverse. He says, turn your spears into pruning hooks. The writer of Ecclesiastes says there is a time for war and a time for peace, even a time for love and a time for hate. I find those thoughts very difficult to square, but I think I get the meaning. Our fellow human beings should not have to suffer, and we should be taking some action. But then I say, I don't know about you, but I'm mixed up. Deterrence and disarmament. Turn the other cheek, precision bombing. All I can say is I'm glad I'm not a politician, and I'm glad I'm not chief of the defense staff. But I must say I am fearful for the future, not only for our country, and not only for our people, but for the whole world. So what can you and I do? As I said, I did not preach the sermon I had prepared for the readings we heard, but maybe that New Testament reading still stands. The father loved his son so much that he traveled a great distance in miles, as well as status and belief, to get to Jesus. He was a nobleman. He lived some 20 miles away from where Jesus was. He traveled those 20 miles on foot in the hot and the dusty road. He was a courtier at the court of Herod, and he had to go to a man who was a mere carpenter. He was a Jew, a good Jew, and he had to go to somebody who was preaching some strange ideas to his belief. He had to travel some distance, but he persisted and he got there. Sometimes we too have to travel a distance in our understanding of others, our patience with others, even our acceptance of others. And maybe in our prayers we have to travel a distance too. Then Jesus gave him the assurance that his son would live. And this nobleman believed him and responded. We have the words of Jesus. We understand what his message was about, where it was coming from, and why he gave it, and how we should live it. So we then should pray, believe, and accept. And some action is needed, as the psalmist said, that we might turn away from evil and do good. But that the torch only worked when my little friend shook it hard. Some work was needed, some action was necessary. Turn away from evil and do good. And strive for peace with all your heart. We must pray today, peace for Paris. We must also work and pray for peace for the whole world. Amen.